It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And unusual beginning of the show. We get a name that isn't a Van Wee. Joey is visiting the show today. He and Adam have been friends for some time, I gather.
Yeah, quite a while, actually. We've met through a local financial planning chapter.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you do a little rundown?
Yeah.
Let's welcome the people first and then do it so they all know where we sit.
Yep, you're leading the show. You tell us what you want.
All right. To our routine listeners, the ones we count on all the time, very special thank you, as always, for you. If you're new to the show, either you got told about it or left the radio on or whatever, then try to stick around for the whole hour. We promise you that you'll always learn something in the course of that time. And I don't think we've ever let anybody down. And we've got another month to go before a quarter of year 10 is done, which does not seem at all physically possible since I get no older day to day. What was that?
Yeah, that doubt, skepticism, whatever you
want
to call it.
Anyway, before I was so rudely contradicted, got a lot to talk about. We just finished a week, a month, a quarter that will go into the record books.
It was a good one.
It was a lot of fun. And we'll get into that. And we'll get into all of that after Adam tells you a little bit about what we're doing today as all three of us.
Yeah, so I invited Joey on the show. I've known him for quite a while. He moved down here from Virginia about 10 years ago, about 12 years ago, actually, to take a job with another local firm. But a couple of years ago, something changed. He set out on his own and started Flow Financial. That was in 2022. And he's got a specialty in equity compensation and retirement planning. And he does things a little bit different than we do. And I found it really interesting. And I thought you, as the listeners, might appreciate hearing a little bit different take on financial planning and the process involved with that. And so I invited him on the show today to talk about it.
You know, sometimes we will bring people in. We've had Craig Beechler on a few times. He's an angel investor, something we do none of and know a little about. And we get Christine Kennedy in. We get Marshall in to talk about reverse mortgages. So things that we are not specialists in. Once in a while, we like to punctuate the show. So you get a good idea the overall value of a CFP and how to find someone who fits in your niche real well. So today is a new topic for me. I know very, very, very little about equity planning, and I will be here, like most of you will, to listen and learn for the most part. Although, as you all know, it is very difficult to keep my mouth shut.
We know.
Yeah, I don't try to hide it. So anyway, this week, he said, smiling.
It was a good one.
It was a good one.
Yep, two of the three major indexes ended the quarter on a really high note. It was a Good Friday shortened trading week as well, so we only had 4 days to worry about, be excited about. Depends on your take on the market.
It's always a Good Friday when you don't lose any money.
That is true. The NASDAQ slipped a little. It dropped just 50 points, 0.3%, but the Dow was up 0.8% and the S&P gained 0.4%. But overall, just a wildly successful quarter. The Dow was up 5.6%, the NASDAQ 9.1%, and the S&P up 10.2%. So for the short term, that puts the market in an overbought situation, but it's also solidly in an uptrend. And it's really backed up by the AI technology boom. And that's what's been driving the market higher, in my opinion. That and the expectation of rate cuts, which seem to be slipping a little bit further down the road every day with every inflation report.
Yeah, it's only about April 1, but they're running out of time to get their plan made. If they're going to do what the independent Fed is supposed to do, they don't have to do anything. But the independent Fed, you know, is going to do something to boost Biden.
I mean, I think they're going to do something to try and keep their jobs, more or less.
Well, that's why.
Yeah.
They could hate him. They still want to work.
But it's, yeah, I don't see a clear case to cut rates right now. I don't see it. I don't know why they would do it.
Look at the inflation numbers that came out.
Exactly.
We're not in a downturn. We're in an uptick. Might be an uptick within a downturn.
But yeah. But
we are spiking a little bit now. It's the worst time ever to consider a rate cut.
I wouldn't do one personally, but I am. They didn't ask me, or they never asked me.
Well, I'd ask you, but I know what the answer would be, so I'd be wasting my breath.
So sometimes we're finding that all-time highs can be just as scary as a bear market. We're getting calls from clients about being worried about the market being too high. And I understand that. The economy still doesn't feel great. If you ask the average person on the street, you're probably going to get a somewhere from a meh to a, it's terrible.
52% people say they're worse off.
Yep. And inflation numbers, as we just talked about, they're creeping back up. There's an election in November that's got everybody on edge. And just overall, people are anxious right now and they can't figure out why the market is doing so well. Now, if you take all of that into consideration, you might think, well, maybe I should go collect 5% on my cash. But a good start to the year is more often than not an indicator that the rest of the year will be decent. I know it seems contrarian or hard to believe, but that the stats will back that up. When you see a good first quarter, it would most times pay you to stay invested.
Well, you said something in the office this past week that I thought was interesting. You said you thought the market was factoring in a Trump victory.
Possibly. I think that's one possibility.
At least it's not verifiable, but it's an understandable reason why the market would be at this level, despite some of the things that are going on.
I mean, it could be a Trump victory or a Biden victory with a House and or a Senate that is the other party.
So, yes, and the trivia question, which we'll get to right after the first break, is also on the list of reasons why the market is good. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised when I get to it.
Okay. Well, international stocks, much like their U.S. counterparts, were pretty muted this week. The international index was basically flat. Emerging markets were down 0.2%. Part of that was due to our old friend China and Hong Kong, which appear to have resumed their declines after a brief period of hope that the government intervention and stimulus could turn things around for them. It still might happen, but I'm not going to bet on it just yet. Commodities had a mixed week, but the index managed a small gain. It was under 0.5%, despite the natural gas continuing its incredible trend of dropping every week.
You have to keep reminding me, don't you?
It's down another 5% this week. Gas has been floundering, but oil has been sneakily heading higher.
Yeah, you're seeing it at the pump, too.
I was just going to mention that.
Good.
Been getting lots of complaints in the office about gas prices. That means it's closer to $4 than to $3. That's typically when people start really noticing. And with the summer driving season approaching, I would not look for prices to come down anytime soon. It's probably going to hit that 4 number, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there's absolutely no chance before Memorial Day. Probably there's not much chance until the 4th of July.
Just feel a little bit better knowing that I was in California last week paying over 5.
There you go. So it feels like a relief to you, right?
Exactly.
That's something to that. You know, they're their own worst enemies, as we all know, but it doesn't matter. There are some things that are going wrong, like the Chicago Manufacturing Index fell off a cliff. And apparently some people are surprised about that. The EV market has slown way down. People are expressing their opinions, and they're not happy about it. Tesla shows it. So one of the Magnificent Seven is doing very poorly. So it's the same thing it's been all year and a half or two. It's partly up, partly down, and we don't know. All right, we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we have, as usual, a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Kenny at 904-636-7888. Corporate profits are very good right now. This is what I was mentioning before the break. It's another reason the stock market is up nicely, because when you come right down to it, the value of a company is very dependent on how much money they make. Shock, 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 huh? So I want to know, what year was the last time corporate profits were as large as they are now on a percentage basis? What year? And I'll tell you, it's after the 1800s.
Thanks.
You only got about 120.
Narrows
choices,
it down.
Something like that. Okay. So, you know, if somebody wants to give us a call, 904-222-8255. You can start putting a bracket on it anyway. Everybody else will thank you. I did want to mention also that Japan is doing very well. They're being rewarded for not being quite as dumb as they were the last 30 years.
Positive interest rates for a change.
Yep. Yeah, 0.0 to 0.01.
It's 0.10. Not negative, though.
Yeah. But that's, yeah. So they do something that's not incredibly stupid, and the market's going crazy. So that's the way it is. Some people are very easily pleased, apparently. Anything else you want to wrap up with?
No, I mean, I had a few other things, but nothing interesting enough to take time away from the real reason that we're here today, and that was to bring in Joey Loss. He is the owner of Flow Financial as of 2022. So I wanted to bring him in today and talk a little bit about some of the areas that he specializes in that we do not. Not that we don't touch on them, we just may not have the same level of expertise. So Joey, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your company and how you got started and where a little bit about what you look for in a client.
Sure. So I got started in planning about 10 years ago. Started Flow Financial in 2022, as you said. And I've spent the majority of that time working with pre-retirees and retirees focused on things like aging planning, benefits planning as people transition out of the workforce and into retirement, figuring out the intersections of cash flow needs, how to structure a good distribution plan. And basically, everybody's main question is, how do I minimize taxes across my lifetime to enjoy as much of my savings as I possibly can? And it's kind of amazing. I'm sure you guys noticed too, when you dig into that, just how much of a difference it can make when you choose where to pull money from and when.
Oh, for sure. It's probably the most complicated and stressful question that retirees ask themselves.
Absolutely. And so one of the areas that we had talked about focusing on is Medicare premium planning and the dreaded IRMA charge that everybody loves so much, and marketplace premium planning, which is kind of a specialty I've gotten into over the last few years, just because a lot of people who save prudently over their lifetime have the opportunity to retire a little bit sooner, and Medicare's not on the table until they reach age 65, so there are other options to consider.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
We get that question constantly.
It's the biggest thing that keeps people from retiring early is healthcare.
Got plenty of money. I want to quit at 55, 58, 59, 60, 61. Well, what are you going to do about healthcare, health insurance?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the boogeyman. Yeah. And it keeps people from living life and enjoying their healthy years.
Yeah, even if you can afford COBRA, it's only, what, 18 months?
Right. And a lot of times, you know, when people start to really dig into their options, the COBRA option seems like the safest one because it's the boogeyman you know, but it may not be the best deal that you can get for a similar coverage.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anyone describe COBRA as the best deal.
No.
It's never the best deal.
No, and I was looking at averages, and right now per person, the average cost of COBRA continuation of coverage is between $400 and $700 a person. So for a couple, that easily gets to $10,000 to $17,000 a year.
Wow. Those are big numbers.
Yeah, big numbers.
And that's all after-tax dollars if you're a retiree, too. There's no way to funnel it through a corporation.
Right.
I mean, you're paying that out of pocket.
Right. Maybe if you itemize elsewhere, you can hope to have that count as part of a medical expense, but that's pretty reachy.
Yeah, that seems like you'd have to have some serious issues to reach that level.
Well, yeah, if you're doing an individual medical expense, 7.5% of your income it's a high floor, I guess. I've never seen anybody who could do that except on the really bad year.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
In fact, I argued right here on the show that one year they were trying to take that whole thing away, go to 10% and then eliminate it completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, come on, people. You're talking about a few thousand people a year, and you're talking about getting them on the worst year of their lives and taking that tax benefit away.
Right.
Get a life. And apparently they were listening because they put it back the way it was.
Yeah, I'm glad they did.
I love taking credit for things, whether or not it's deserved.
Oh, I'm sure they heard you. That was the difference. So since we sort of went down the marketplace premium planning path first, can we talk a little bit more about that? What would you tell someone who has come in and they're 54 and say, I want to retire and I need healthcare coverage?
It's a great question. So I think the first thing we would look at is, just as most planners do, we try to understand the overall picture and make sure that if you retired today financially, would you be okay? Once we start to get a sense of the answer is yes, maybe it's a few years down the line. Let's say they're going to stop work at 57, so mm-hmm. a couple of years from now. What we would want to figure out is, how are we going to how can we keep your income low enough during the first several years of retirement on your tax return so that you can qualify for the most healthcare subsidy you possibly can?
Mm-hmm.
And if we do a really good job of that, we'll cover your cash flow needs so that you're able to live a lifestyle that you enjoy and that you're used to. But we'll be able to manipulate income for the tax return's sake so that you can get healthcare premiums as close to $0 as possible. Now, sometimes if people have a lot of savings, you know, one of the punishments of having done a great job is paying taxes somehow, always.
Always.
And so there's limits. You know, every situation is different, and sometimes we can get premiums down to zero for those several years before you reach age 65.
You're talking about through Obamacare?
Through Obamacare.
Okay.
And other times, that's just not an option. So a lot of the evaluation that I'll be doing is figuring out what is the best path for the last few years of work to set you up to be able to accomplish that in the best way possible. Because really, that's going to be the most painful tax that applies to the next 10 years for that 54-year-old person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Understandable.
That makes sense. And are there any, besides lowering income, well, let me ask that a different way. When you talk about lowering income, what does that mean? I don't think that everyone knows how you can lower your income. A lot of people think income is income.
Right.
And what can you do to affect that?
Right. So, I mean, theoretically, this is so full of traps, this process. When you quit work, let's say you ended work at the end of 2023, right? You're now entering 2024. Let's say you're a married couple and you're 61 years old. You've got 4 years left before you reach Medicare age. Your income's just gone from whatever your high wages were while you were working to zero for this year. You don't want your income so low that you actually show a zero on the tax return. For one, that breaks a financial planner's heart because you have all these low tax brackets you could be using for all your savings, getting that money out of IRAs.
That is true.
Yes.
But the second piece is if you go and try and go to the marketplace and get health care coverage, you're going to get sent to Medicaid.
Oh, with a zero income.
With a zero income.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's, nobody wants that after a long, beautiful career of hard work.
No.
So the trick is you have to get income high enough that you phase out of Medicaid. But you want to keep it as low above that threshold as possible.
Do you know where that threshold is?
Yeah, and that's where it gets complicated. It just depends on your household situation.
Okay.
So if you have, it's all based on the poverty line and household population. Mm-hmm. So if you have one person in the household, that threshold's $15,060 for Florida.
Okay.
If you have two people, it's $20,440, and it rises about $5,000 per person from there.
Okay.
So what we're trying to do, and I just did a case for this at the end of last year, and then an inheritance blew it up. And of course, an inheritance is a good thing, but this shows you how fickle this type of tax planning can be.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a lot of time trying to figure out between this person started at zero income. They had a little bit of a hobby business that they did. We decided not to write off any expenses because we needed to get income up somehow. Mm-hmm. And then we said, well, they have this big IRA and they have nothing else going on. They're at the 0% tax bracket. I don't want my heart broken. So we're going to take some of that and do a Roth conversion. But when we were deciding how much to convert, we decided, let's get you just above the threshold because your biggest expense next year, hands down, is going to be health insurance if we just go gangbusters on that Roth conversion. So what we did is we converted maybe another $10,000. That got them just above the line. So they're out of Medicaid into marketplace premium happy land where they're getting a maximum subsidy.
And did that result in a zero payment or a close to zero payment?
That's where we were. And then
did some other stuff happen.
Right. And then some bonehead sold this person a deferred annuity before I was in the, or sold their mother a deferred annuity before I was in the picture. And
oh, geez.
They inherited that. And that was a big old ordinary tax bomb.
Okay. Well, sometimes the best planning is just not enough.
Right.
Crazy.
We see a lot of that kind of thing too. You know, we always call the inheritance the best and worst of everything.
Right.
You lose somebody, but you gain something. And then sometimes there's that third aspect. What does it mean to you financially? And that one is a weird one, but I can see how it would come down to that and be very upsetting. So then what? It's a one-time deal. then start over again, basically?
Well, that question is going to have to wait till after the break because we are just about to hit it. So, yeah.
We got another...
another 10 seconds or okay. so.
All right. Well, in that case, we will take a short break. We'll come right back. The trivia question will still be there, so we'll pay a couple bills and see you on the other side. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
I'm Joey Loss.
And we're going to remind you once again, lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at the trivia question. What year was the last time corporate profits were as high as they are now as a percentage? And we have nothing yet except that it was after the year 1899.
Yeah, or if you have any questions about Medicare premium planning
Absolutely.
Or marketplace premium planning, now would be a really good time to call in and ask them.
Yep. Joey's kind of a specialist in that kind of thing and in the equity, restricted stock areas and all that. Things that Adam and I know enough about that we can spell the words. That's about it.
Yeah, no, we definitely know a little bit about planning for income and retirement.
Yeah, there's one thing I can spell in my sleep, it's Irma.
Yeah, but equity compensation is definitely not a specialty of ours. So if you have questions about that too, feel free to call in. But really, I think that the Medicare premium and for people who want to retire early, the marketplace premium planning are real issues that affect a lot more people than equity comp.
Yeah, and I will reiterate from the standpoint of our business that probably the single hardest question we deal with is I need to have insurance coverage until Medicare age. And there are no great answers, but I'm going to learn a little more about it in the next few minutes. So carry on with the case you're talking about.
We were talking about a case where
some idiot left a kid a bunch of money.
Joey had done a lot of work planning out in great detail somebody's financial situation to minimize their income but get it just above the line where they would have had to go on Medicaid. And then apparently something else happened.
That's right. An inheritance happened. And, of course, in the grand scheme, this pushed all of this person's financial planning numbers up. But as far as what we were aiming for this year and all the diligent work we'd done around planning income to maximize subsidies and reduce out-of-pocket healthcare costs on the marketplace, we were in a bit of a pickle. So what ended up happening was that income occurred. There's nothing we could really do about that. And so then we had a decision, which was, do we want to rectify the fact that that subsidy will go away now? Or do we want to wait until tax time when we file in 2025 for 2024 and be surprised with a huge tax bill because you have to repay all the subsidy when they recognize how much income you actually had?
Now, is there any kind of penalties or interest on that when they realize that you had more income than what you were supposed to have?
There's not typically a penalty for that. It's not treated quite the same way as, you know, if you had just underpaid withholding throughout the year on the rest of regular income. Plus, situationally, I think you could make a strong case that, look, I wasn't expecting to receive this inheritance. It's kind of an unusual event.
Yeah, and that's probably true.
Right. But it's going to be not very fun when you played close to $0 a month on health insurance premiums thinking you're in the clear. And if you didn't have help that was going to point out, hey, you're actually going to owe probably $14,000 in back health insurance premiums to repay these subsidies, that's going to be a scary conversation with your tax accountant.
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah. And so what we decided to do is, as we were making a distribution for that that beloved deferred annuity, which I don't like.
It's another show. But
yeah, that's its own topic.
We're with you.
I did a calculation to figure out what withholding would be appropriate so that we're back to the tax filing that we would expect the next year. So she felt good because she got an inheritance that she wasn't expecting. She got to take all of that, and it's going to stay in her pocket. And we took the taxes out of the picture right away before she got it.
Yep, and that always eases the pain of paying taxes a little bit when it's already gone by the time you receive the money.
Hence
paycheck withholdings and their great success at being implemented in every aspect of our lives.
Right.
And I assume every year renews the you start at zero and see what your income's going to be. So it is truly just a one-time thing for something like an inheritance.
Yeah, and they do look at the current year, unlike Irma, which looks a couple of years back. So it's kind of a nice feature of, if there is any nice feature of the, you know, that would be the one, is that they're really focused on this year. And the reason that comes up, and there can be this discrepancy, is because when you go to apply for coverage on the marketplace, you indicate what you believe your income is going to be for that year. And that's what determines the subsidy you get to enjoy throughout the year. Okay. How wrong you are, one way or the other, is rectified when you file the following year.
What carriers do people use for that, insurance carriers?
Typically, I mean, it depends kind of regionally. Okay. What's available to you. You know, they ask for all your demographic info to know where you are, so what coverages will be there. But
is it competitive? You know what the price is going to be because you get a subsidy, but is it competitive for things like additional benefits and that sort of thing?
There's all different levels of plans.
Okay.
So if you want to get, for example, the $0 net premium that people aim for is based on a silver plan. In most people's cases, the silver plan would be just fine, but they have gold and platinum plans as well for people that have special needs. Those are going to result in an out-of-pocket cost no matter what your income looks like, but they're available.
Okay. All right, good. So what is the next steps on that case? What happens next?
So in that case, honestly, for this year, that's pretty much done. She's got one more year of marketplace premium planning next year. And then after that, she'll be in 65. The land of Medicare. Yeah. So
a lot of people are really kind of confounded when I tell them that Medicare is actually a pretty good service. Unfortunate about the Irma thing, which is really just an income tax and nothing else. But we've been very happy. We've been on Medicare for several years now with a supplement on the side. We lay out almost nothing.
Yeah. I mean,
it's good.
It's good coverage.
Yeah.
So that's a great segue into the second topic we wanted to talk about today, which is Medicare premium planning and the avoidance of Irma in particular. I think Irma, if you had to, I was saying this at the break, but I think if you asked our clients what is the most annoying tax they have ever paid, they would say Irma. They hate it. Every single person who pays it hates it.
And the corollary, there are two corollaries. One is most people don't even know they're paying it because they never look at their Social Security statement and find out what they're being charged. But two is one of the most pleasant situations a planner can come across is when the SA-44 comes into play. And we've helped clients get back thousands and thousands of dollars. All that says is you had a change of life that isn't factored in, like you quit work, got divorced, whatever happened to you, and you can get some of it back. So it's important to know if you are paying Irma that situation should be looked into in detail to see if you're paying it the right way.
And there are certain reasons you can get out of it and certain reasons you can't get out of it. Exactly. So you have to read the rules before you get excited about getting rid of it. So, Joey, tell me a little bit about maybe a case you've had or what you do in general to plan for Medicare premiums.
Sure. So one of the considerations, you know, people love when they quit work to go to zero taxes, right? And so if they're at 65, let's say you're age 65 when you quit work, right? So you're going straight to Medicare. You're skipping all the other stuff we've talked about. You have an option. You if you have big retirement accounts, you know, which many of us do by that point, you can enjoy not paying taxes, and maybe you're living on a taxable account or you have a pension or something like that, and that's obviously going to be taxable. But for the most part, you're in low tax brackets, and you'll be enjoying the lowest level of Medicare premium you could pay. But if you fast forward to when you reach required minimum distribution age, you're probably going to have some pretty large distributions. Now your ordinary income tax floor is going to be higher forever. You're never going to not have required minimum distributions. You probably got Social Security that's going to be tacked on there too. So give that another boost to your tax brackets. But one of the things people don't think about, I'm so glad to hear you talk about Irma as a tax because that's exactly what it is.
Oh, I was actually told that by someone who worked for Social Security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she said, were fired the next day. But
probably. But I thanked her profusely for telling me the truth. And then I gave her credit on the radio show. Said, it is so refreshing when you're about to get into an argument with somebody or you're looking for an answer that they're not about to give. And instead of that, she just tells you the truth. So I thanked her and hung up.
I mean, if you just described it and didn't tell anyone what it was, it's something that you pay more when you make more money. What is that? To the government.
Right.
That's a tax. I mean,
that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Well, especially if you don't use Medicare Part D, the drug plan, you still get an IRMA charge for it, but you don't use it.
Yeah.
That's how we got into the discussion where it wound up. That's what prompted her to tell me it's just an income tax.
Yeah. Well, that plays in because you've got these ordinary income taxes. We painted the hierarchy and how that's rising. And now when you add in the IRMA charge, you kind of have this invisible extra tax that, you know, you may be looking on paper and saying, okay, I'm now in the 35% tax bracket forever because I'm at required minimum distribution age. But you're actually higher than that because your IRMA went up too, but it's not going to show up in your tax return in other places the same way.
Difference between marginal rate and effective rate.
Right. And so when you're at 65 and you're deciding, do I want to enjoy no taxes or keep moving? A lot of times when you really dig into everything, not just ordinary income tax brackets, but also the IRMA charges, it makes a lot of sense to go ahead and start doing something like a Roth conversion now, because you actually might prevent yourself not only from going up in ordinary income tax brackets later, but you may prevent being stuck with crappy IRMA charges for the rest of your life.
My personal opinion is that most Roth conversions are not worth it. Real simple. But the other part of that opinion is, for the right people, it can save you a lot of money.
That's right.
April is Personal Financial Month and National Literacy, Financial Literacy Month. I'm starting now. I've been talking about young people learning more about money than they did before. Now, I'll tell you a little more right after the break, but I'm going to start on taxes next week. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
A reminder, the trivia question is still out there. What was the last year corporate profits were as high as they are now, percentage-wise? And the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And Adam has a PSA, something you've probably all heard before.
Yeah, it's coming up again.
It's an annual event, so you're going to hear about it for a lot of annuals.
So our friends, the Diwalis, lost their son to cancer a few years ago. They have started a foundation. All the profits of the foundation go to the Mulligan Lab at St. Jude's, and that lab actually researches the same type of leukemia that took their son from them. Their biggest event of the year is a golf tournament at Queens Harbor. This year it's on Sunday, May 5th. It's going to be a great event. It always is a ton of fun for a really great cause. If you want to sign up, please go to www.joestrong.org, or you can call the office. We'll give you all the information. Really fun event. Hope to see you all out there.
Mm-hmm. That's 904-685-1505.
We had a couple calls, but they seem to have dropped. So,
If anybody wants to take the shot, it's 222-8255. Meanwhile, money income planning. We're talking on the break. It's a tough topic because what we're dealing with is modified adjusted gross income. And until I get a couple more sessions under my belt, a lot of you are not going to know what that is. But it's not like it's based on taxable income, which is a lot easier to manipulate. So you have to be real careful when you're doing this stuff. All right.
We've got a call incoming, so maybe not the best time to jump into something right now. But Joey, we were talking about Medicare premium planning, and what in your experience is the most difficult part about planning for people's or figuring out what the optimal amount of income is for Medicare?
For Medicare, it really comes down to choice and factors like how much wiggle room is there in the overall financial plan matters. Because when there's more wiggle room, the openness to exploring things like Roth conversions or potentially delaying a pension is higher.
We do have a caller. We're going to take it because those are the rules. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen, and happy Easter.
Well, same to you. Thank you.
I'm going to take a stab. I have no idea, Steve, but I'm going to say 1921.
Well, 1921 is not a bad guess, but it's a little too early.
Okay.
We had a good year since then. Anything else we can do for you today?
No, just enjoy the show. Oh, have my coffee you. And happy Easter, you guys.
Thanks. Enjoy the sunshine.
Thanks so much.
Take care. All right, 1921, it's later than that, so we just narrowed the bracket a bit.
All right, yeah.
Ready, set?
Go ahead. So you were telling us that the wiggle room in the plan is important, and what do you mean by that exactly?
So, for example, a lot of people, if they have a pension, they want to take it right away, right? Yeah. They want to get that
Most
going.
Most people, yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you lose your income, I think your natural instinct is to replace that income as soon as possible.
Right. And it's very complicated to even talk about esoterically, but if you have a pension, you have retirement accounts, some people might have deferred compensation, you've got a lot of options. You've got a lot of levers to turn on or delay income.
Including Social Security.
Including Social Security. And you mentioned that we look at modified adjusted gross income. So the types of investments you're holding in a non-retirement account also play in. So, you know, one could argue, do we want to try and let this wag the dog, but this benefit, you know, wag the dog and kind of change the direction of everything else. I think there's a happy middle ground where you can accomplish and stick with your well-diversified portfolio. You can have all different types of fixed income. You can enjoy your pension at some point. The trick is to figure out what is the best combination of using these levers to maximize the amount of money and minimize the amount of money that I get to enjoy that I've saved across my lifetime and minimize the amount of taxes like Irma that I pay.
Yeah, that makes sense. We always tell people it's great to have different buckets of money in retirement. Some people think that the only way to save for retirement is a 401k, but that is so far from the truth. You can also, especially nowadays, Roth 401ks are available. You've got your, if you are able to contribute to a Roth IRA, that's a great option. But then having a big brokerage account in retirement can be your best friend as well. And a lot of people don't know that. It's funny how many people think that once you've filled your 401k, there's no other options.
The brokerage account is so underrated.
It really is.
Everybody loves the Roth. I love the Roth.
Yeah,
of course. But there are times where the Roth can't do for you something that a brokerage account
could. Exactly. And you're a lot less hesitant to use money from a brokerage account than you are to use money from a Roth.
Absolutely.
By the way, one new change in the tax law. I often wondered why people would ever want to put money in a Roth 401k because they were subject to RMDs. So you're just going to have to take it out. That was canceled. Oh, no longer.
I did not know that.
No, it's brand new news. So just something to think about. Used to be that there was almost a slam dunk rolling out the Roth portion when you get out so you wouldn't have to. It's not any longer necessary. Just, you know, try to come up with some goodies once in a while.
Yeah.
Carry on.
And just to continue on the brokerage account, you know, so many people, and like in the state of Florida, everybody, when they have a child, they love to think about saving for education and things like that. A lot of times I see people trying to do this at the expense of their own well-being financially.
That's
did that trivia question
that's
recently.
That's a big
too.
One for us. We always tell people, do not rob from your own retirement to pay for your kids' college. There are lots of ways to fund college.
And we've heard it a million times. You can borrow for education. You cannot borrow for retirement.
That's right. No one's going to make you a loan when you're in your golden years.
Right.
58% of parents who help the kids like that say that it's at their own expense.
Yeah.
They know they're hurting their retirement doing this. They do it anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay. I love my kids. My wife loves my kids. Everybody loves our kids. But no.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll give them, you know, something here, something there, birthdays and stuff. But I'm not going to take something out of our retirement, give it to the kids because I want to or they want me to or something like that. It's crazy. Of course, they know enough not to ask.
Yeah.
And then the last footnote on the brokerage account is it's the only one you've got that gets a step up in basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's absolutely true too.
No doubt about it.
Which hopefully you're spending it all having a great time in retirement. But if there's anything left.
Well, you know, the old well-wisher line says, may your last check bounce.
Right. Right. That's and just to tie it back to my disdain for the deferred annuity, you don't get that pleasure there.
No, you sure don't. And hence the tax situation right. that your client found themselves in.
Mm-hmm. There's no one's ever come up with a way around that I know of.
But when you are planning income pre-retirement and into retirement, having different buckets to choose from with different taxable consequences for withdrawing that money, it can be a real lifesaver. It can avoid going into higher tax brackets. It can avoid IRMA. It can avoid, there's so many reasons that it makes sense to have at least two, if not three, including Roth money, buckets of money in retirement.
Absolutely.
I should probably throw one thing in here. None of the people in this room today are tax preparers. None of us have the ability to prepare your return. Everybody can do their own, and I would never do that. I don't think Adam would either. But we are not preparers. But if you want a really good tax planner, a CFP is a great way to start.
Yeah, and I love that it's just become so much more popular in our profession over the last few years to be into this.
Yeah, it's almost I don't want to call it a requirement, but if you're just out there touting the returns on your portfolio as a planner, you're really missing out on a lot of what you should be doing.
Yeah, and the irony is when it comes to tax planning, that's the only quasi-guaranteed return we're allowed to talk about. You know what I mean? Yeah, the SEC has our number if we talk about anything else, and we can't guarantee
people talk about,
else.
Well, the biggest expenditure you're ever going to make is your house. No, it's not.
No way.
It's your income taxes.
Yeah.
Are you guys too young to remember when Ross Perot was running for president? He got interviewed by Katie Couric. I'll never forget it. And she was going to get him. You know, he's a Republican, big money guy. So she asked him point blank, what was the largest personal check you ever wrote? And he said it, I don't know, it was $250,000 or $2.5 million, some damn thing. It was a lot of money. And she said, well, what was that for? He said, my federal income taxes. You have never seen a conversation turn left any faster than that ever. It was hysterical. Anyway, I'm sorry, I digress.
Yeah, that is, I do enjoy that. So once you have...